Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. And this hour, we're looking at how the COVID pandemic is dividing Florida from schools to sports to even whether or not you wear a mask in public. Let's begin with education. Some Florida students and teachers went back to classrooms this week. Others logged on to start the school year virtually. Now, these are the new rituals during the pandemic that are going to be repeated in the weeks to come as the new school year begins all across the state. Governor Ron DeSantis said one local school leader who welcomed back her students compared the start of the new academic year to a military operation.
Martin County Superintendent Lori Gaylord told me today that she viewed reopening her schools as a mission akin to a Navy SEAL operation. Just as the SEALs surmounted obstacles to bring Osama bin Laden to justice, so too would the Martin County school system find a way to provide parents with a meaningful choice of in-person instruction or continued distance learning. All in, all the time.
On the Gulf Coast, Hillsborough County schools were warned this week that if in-person classes were not offered when the new year begins, the school district would not get its full share of state funding. The district's original reopening plan included classrooms, and the state approved it. But last week, the Hillsborough School Board decided it would go online only in the first month of the school year. After the threat from the state, though, the school board decided just the first week of school will be online. Then parents can choose whether or not to send their kids to the classroom. Neighboring Pinellas County schools stuck to their reopening plans, with some students online, others heading back to the classroom, scheduled a week from this coming Monday. Even as the school board heard what will happen if a student or teacher gets COVID-19, a two-week quarantine for anyone who shared a classroom or bus with that person. This is Pinellas County School Board member Nicole Carr.
Sometimes I think there's this magical thinking that it's going to go away, or it's not really going to have an effect because we opened a safe school. But even no matter how safe the building itself is, people are still coming into the building with COVID.
Teachers are posting their obits online preemptively, saying they're worried they're going to die when they go back into the classroom. They're filing their wills and posting those publicly. This is the fraud environment in this state, and how we should start the year during a pandemic is just one of the issues dividing all of us at this time. Now, Florida was fractured to begin with, but now, how do you see the pandemic affecting your relationships? Where do you stand on mask wearing, opening schools, all the other restrictions we're living with to try to deal with this virus? Wherever you are in the state, we want to hear from you on the Florida Roundup. Call us up now at 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup as we welcome two outstanding guests, Craig Pittman of the Florida Phoenix, the author of five books, including his latest, Oh Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. Hi, Craig. Good to have you. Also with us, Mark Woods, columnist with the Florida Times Union in Jacksonville and the author of Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. Mark, good to have you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Let's begin with you, Mark, because a teacher in Jacksonville, where you and I both work, went viral this week because she posted her obituary on Facebook. She's going back into the classroom next week, but said that she's doing it kicking and screaming, that she's begged the district and the state to go to all virtual learning. And of course, we have a hybrid plan in Jacksonville, as do many other districts around the state. This, to me, is a symbol of how divided we are here in Florida as to how best to proceed safely in this pandemic. As you talk to people who don't always agree on these issues, what are you hearing about this?
Yeah, this is such a gut-wrenching time for, you know, for parents, for administrators, and I do really feel for teachers. You know, when we tried to have the RNC here in Jacksonville, that was clear cut for me that, you know, this should not happen with schools. I mean, there's clearly scientific reasons not to have them open, but then there's also scientific reasons why kids need to be in schools. I did a column this past week about this local teacher who's been teaching visual arts for 40 years. He's 64 years old. He wants to be back in the classroom. And to understand his perspective, you kind of have to go back to his childhood, growing up in poverty, all kinds of issues at home. He said that teachers saved his life, and while he didn't really put it quite this dramatically, he's willing to risk his life to save some students now. But I get, I really feel for teachers in this. I feel for parents. I don't think there's an easy answer on how to approach it. I wish we had done better at getting it under control so there was an easier answer now.
Yeah, that's the thing. Craig Pittman, let's go to you. By the way, your new book is called Cattail. Let me mention that. If this state had handled the pandemic correctly from the outset, and frankly, it goes beyond Florida, it's the whole country. If we had handled this more proactively from the outset, teachers and students and all of us, we wouldn't be in the fix we're in now. And perhaps we might not be as divided as we are.
Correct. The big problem here, I think, is that the people in charge, they are not listening to the scientists and the doctors. The Hillsborough School Board took the action it took at the urging of local doctors who said, don't open up, you know, let the kids learn online. And so they said, okay, we're going to go online. And then the governor and the education commissioner came down on them hard and said, you can't do that. Meanwhile, they're pushing, you know, football and so forth. But the governor's mansion isn't open for tours. So it seems to me that there's a kind of a double standard here.
Right. I think that's what's rankling people, seeing school boards meeting on Zoom because it's not safe to meet in person,
right,
while they plan on how to open schools. But again, let's be clear, this is coming from the state. Schools are being denied funding if they don't open. Meanwhile, I want to ask you both about mask wearing. Now, this week, Marion County Sheriff Billy Woods banned his sheriff's deputies from using masks when they're on duty. Here is Ocala resident Joe Kay speaking about it during a council meeting there. Listen to this.
The city of Ocala is a national embarrassment. And the Marion County, our sheriff being held up, you know, as the poster child for not wearing masks.
Mark Woods, we know that mask wearing will save lives. This is not in dispute. Let me also point out that a new survey from USF School of Public Affairs finds that not only do 3/4 of Florida residents support closing public schools for the fall semester, 87% of Floridians support a statewide mask mandate. 87%. So a sheriff like that one is an outlier, certainly. But let's be clear, there is no mask mandate for the state of Florida, despite the fact that the public wants it. What about that?
Right. Yeah, I want to hope that Sheriff Woods is no relation to me. Even absurdly irresponsible. I mean, Marion County has, you know, we're the hotbed, this state, of coronavirus, and Marion County has had, that same day that was announced, they had a single-day record of 13 deaths. But as you said, in general, the public supports this, and Governor DeSantis has rejected it, saying, I think one of his quotes has been that you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar. But using a strategy, we've led the world in catching coronavirus. You know, one of the arguments against mask mandates is we can't go around enforcing it. But I think you've noticed probably in Jacksonville, after we had the mandate, things changed. Even it didn't take enforcement, just instantly overnight, people were more apt to be wearing masks. So it does make a difference to have a mandate, whether not that you're going to go around telling police to spend a lot of time enforcing it.
Craig Pittman, it's Tom Hudson. What's striking with the mask question and also with the school reopening question is that it's local decisions. And the state, the governor, particularly has used that explanation to some degree. And on other opportunities, he has talked about state requirements. So how is this kind of communication strategy of some decisions are local, other decisions are not local. How is that influencing how we as Floridians, as members of one state in one border, are kind of reacting and behaving to the situation, but also with each other?
It's kind of dismaying. I mean, Florida has this reputation, up till now, pretty well justified, of being able to handle an emergency well. I mean, we have this fairly efficient setup for whenever hurricanes hit and other disasters, where there are certain decisions made by the state, certain that are left to local governments. And it's as if we've kind of thrown that playbook out the window, with the governor following the lead of whatever's coming out of Washington, as opposed to listening to the local officials and listening to the science folks. Even his own Surgeon General says everybody ought to be wearing a mask, and yet he says, I don't think we can enforce it. You know, we have laws that on how fast people can drive on the highway, and a lot mm-hmm. of people don't follow those laws, and yet we still try them anyway. I don't see why he feels that way about masks.
Yeah.
You know, the end result is we have this patchwork where there's a controversy in just about every county. We've got State Representative Anthony Sabatini, who's running around suing all the local governments mm-hmm. for requiring masks, even though he lost his first hearing up in Leon County. It's very disappointing that, you know, there's this lack of leadership from Tallahassee on something that should be a statewide issue, and instead is being left to the local governments to thrash out kind of on their own, like they've been cut loose.
Kind of talking about how Floridians have been reacting to all the pandemic and different rules in different places and all of the friction that's happening in our communities, as you talk about it, even amongst perhaps your own family members. 305-995-1800, 305-995-1800. Steve is in Tampa. Steve, go ahead. You are on the radio.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I just wanted to share a perspective. I'm a science teacher in Florida, or former science teacher in Florida, I should say. And I resigned my position, and I think that a lot of other teachers would like to do what I did. But as you know, teachers are not particularly highly paid and live in month to month, or paycheck to paycheck, I mean. So they don't have that option. So requiring this, you know, teachers will die. Some students will probably die too. But more important than I think, well, as important as that is, this is going to lead to a lot of spread, and other people are going to die. Grandparents are going to die. Parents are going to die. That sort of thing. So, to me, you know, people can make up reasons like, oh, you know, mental health and all this, but death is worse.
So, Steve, you mentioned you're retiring. Tell us about that decision, if you can, real quick.
Not retiring, resigning.
Resigning. You know, pardon me. Okay.
Yeah, I'm a relatively new teacher. I've been teaching for 2 years, in a science position. But and it was a hard decision to make. But you know, am I willing to risk my family's health to prop up some job numbers? Absolutely not. And especially when, as a science teacher, I'm familiar with how viruses work. You know, if we isolate for 3 weeks, do widespread testing and contact tracing, we can get a handle on it, and then we could actually open for real, you know. Mm-hmm. But no one can agree on, sheriff can't even agree to wear a mask.
Yeah, so, Steve, I appreciate you sharing your story, and best of luck to you and your family.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and the surveys show, Tom, 1 in 5 teachers are where Steve is. They say they won't go back into the classroom. And of course, we've noted on this show, the statewide teachers union has sued over the back to school order from the state. That's still moving through the process. Meanwhile, Vanessa's on the line in Orlando. Hi, Vanessa. You're going to be doing some family pods at home to teach kids. Is that right?
Yes. Myself and my child, we have a pre-existing health condition, and we found another family who we were friends before, but the mom is pregnant. And so based on this, we didn't want to put our children back into a school environment. And then we didn't also want to put them in front of a computer. And so we have opted to take them out of the school system. We hired a nanny who would administer a homeschool curriculum, And so we're doing that. And we are obviously in the fortunate side of the population who can afford to do this because it's not cheap. It's like, you know, paying. I'm sort of viewing this as the year I sent my kid to private school.
Yeah.
So luckily we can do this. But it's interesting because when you make these kinds of pods, you sort of have a social contract with each other that we did this because we are living at the same level of quarantining. We are taking the same level of precautions. And so because of that, it is now limiting our exposure to other families and friends. And I recently had to have a difficult conversation with a family that we're very good friends with and we used to socialize with a lot. And I had to tell her, can't do that. I'm sorry, I don't know when the next time is that we can actually hang out with you. It could be months. And
right.
It's just, these are, you know, uncharted
exactly. Yeah, these are the choices we're all making individually. And, I'm so glad you called, Vanessa, because this is something some families who are able to are doing. And thank you for explaining how that works for your family. That's great that you can do that. Of course, Mark Woods, as we know, many other families who are not as fortunate as Vanessa don't really have those options. They cannot school their children at home for any number of reasons. And so they are having to make difficult decisions about whether to keep their kids at home to learn virtually, which we all know did not go so well for many families, or whether to send children back into the classroom. It's an impossible choice for many families.
Right. I feel for working parents with younger kids. I mean, my daughter was in high school class of 2020, and it was one thing for me to work at home while she was trying to do homework at home. It would have been another when she was 8 or 9 or 10. I can't imagine. Those parents have had quite a challenge. And Vanessa, yeah, that scenario she described is very interesting, kind of creating pods. And kind of going to the broader picture, we can look at other countries that have done this successfully, that have reopened schools, and some of their models have been like that. But the common denominator has been that they've had the community COVID under control before that. So that's the key to success, and that's the problem with what we're doing, is we don't have it under control. The fear is no matter what we attempt in schools that it's going to spread. I think there's a lot of concerns for parents sending their kids back to school and for teachers, as we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, the rate of testing and the rate of positive cases, when you look at the data on that, most of the state, if not all of it, according to public health experts, should be doing virtual learning only. We are seeing virtual learning in some districts, not all. We want to hear from you, Florida, as we talk about these issues on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. We're going to take a quick break, but here's a quick tweet I'll read from Juan as we go to break. He says, my wife is a private school teacher with Archdiocese of Miami, her third trimester of pregnancy, and at risk of contracting COVID. I'm worried for my newborn, given the current reopenings. What's on your mind, Florida? 305-995-1800 and tweets to @FloridaRoundup, the divided state of Florida. More to come next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami today, talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and how it's dividing Floridians on any number of issues: face masks, schools, sports. 305-995-1800 is our phone number, 305-995-1800. Craig Pittman from the Florida Phoenix is with us via Skype. Mark Woods, a columnist for the Florida Times Union, is also with us. And we say hello to Mike in Orlando. Go ahead, Mike. You are on the radio.
Yeah, hey. Can you guys hear me?
Loud and clear. Go ahead, Mike. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hey. I'm kind of confused on this whole numbers thing. They keep saying that, so many thousands of more positive cases. It's my understanding, too, that if one person goes in and gets tested, like, say, today, and then 4 days from now gets tested again, they consider that two positive tests on that just one person. How many more positive tests there are that's making these 30,000 this week and 25,000 next week? I think the numbers are completely wrong, and they're
what makes you think that the numbers are wrong, Mike? I mean, you certainly bring up a valid point around the messiness of the data, and we've talked about that. The state has not done a very good job about clarifying a lot of the information and clarifying questions that have been asked for months. But what makes you question the underlying infections?
It's not the infection itself that I'm questioning. I understand it's a virus and all. I believe thousands more feel like these numbers are just getting thrown in our faces on the news and Corona to scare us from using. And I just heard somebody on the radio just a few minutes ago talking about how it's dividing us as a people. And it seems to be like it's some kind of diversion towards something else. It's strange. Mm. And it also kind of coincides too with the mail-in voting. I think that's the worst idea ever. I'm
not sure how COVID-19 and a infectious virus certainly relates to vote by mail. But you know, you certainly make some valid points regarding the messiness of the data and how it's reported. The fatality numbers that are coming in from the state. There were 9,000 deaths in the state of Florida as of today on this Friday, as we're live on the radio statewide, that have been blamed on COVID-19. That's a number that is verifiable, is out there, and is certainly significant. And that's just for the state of Florida. And those are deaths that have happened since March, Mike. Is that a number that doesn't concern you, or do you question the validity of that as well?
I question the validity of that as well, because
so why do you question the validity of this information, Mike, and how does that affect how you are living your life?
To be honest with you, I go to the store, I go everywhere, my wife, I take my kid with us. Granted, we're not sitting there trying to hug everybody that we see, but we're definitely doing quite all right. We're healthy, we're not sick, and like I said, we're not covering ourselves with a blanket all over, you know, to try and stay away from something.
Do you mask up, Mike? Do you wear your masks?
To be honest with you, the only time we wear a mask is when we're required to do so at your local supermarket. But besides that, no, we don't wear masks.
Well, do you go out to restaurants? Do you socially distance?
We only socially distance when we're required to. We go to the restaurant, and obviously you can't eat with a mask on.
But why do you say only when you're required to? I mean, it's common courtesy. We're trying to. It's looking out for other people so that they don't get sick. Why not do that?
Well, because I know that I'm not sick, and neither is my wife. We've been living our lives, and if we would have been sick, we would have already gotten sick.
So there have been, you know, multiple, countless cases, documented cases of asymptomatic COVID-19 positive infections.
I don't believe that, man.
If you don't believe that.
It's true.
Mike, I mean, that's science involved here. That's
Tom, this is what the whole point of this
uphill.
Show is about, is that many people in this state and in this country don't accept scientific information, which is not political, which is simply being given to the public to save lives. And so that's where we are.
Craig and Mark, I know, Mark, you've got to run here real quick, but I'll give you just thoughts about, you know, you heard Mike there, you know, certainly a reasonable Central Floridian, it sounds like, for the most part, right? I mean, he's not breaking the speed limit because he wants to, or, you know, he's acknowledging the fact that when the mask rules are in place, I'll wear a mask, but yet rejecting what science is saying.
Right. I mean, I think we do become numb to the numbers. And then, as you said, the numbers are messy. And what do they mean? Last weekend, I did a column about Dr. Fulton, Jen Fulton, the head of critical care for Baptist Health here. She was in charge of setting up the COVID unit for five hospitals here. And I've talked to her periodically throughout this, and when I talked to her last week, just her voice was, she just sounded frazzled, exhausted, weary. I could hear her voice cracking, and she said she had story after story of people dying in front of her, and the loved ones can't be there with them. They watch through a window. She's holding their hand, the patient's hand, as that person is dying. And she said, so I wanted to tell that story because I think we forget about, with the numbers, we forget about what's really happening. And she said, yes, things have plateaued, but that means we still have a steady stream of these patients coming in. And she described a story. She told one story about a guy who came in, and on the second day there, he said, I owe you an apology. And she said, why? And she said, I didn't believe this. I thought it was a conspiracy. Now I know. And now you and your staff have to risk your health to help me.
Yeah.
So I think we have to remember that, yes, the numbers are messy, but as you said, that 9,000 isn't just a number, and it's not going away anytime soon.
Yeah. Mark Woods, columnist with the Florida Times Union and author of Lassoing the Sun, A Year in America's National Parks. Mark, thanks for sharing your thoughts on Florida with us here.
Thank you.
Craig Pittman, what struck you about Mike in Orlando and the acceptance of wearing masks when he has to, but the rejection, the outright rejection that somebody could be asymptomatic and still have the virus, could be COVID positive, but not showing any outward signs of the infection?
Well, I think that's symptomatic, pardon the pun, of a lot of Americans' attitudes these days, which is, if it inconveniences me, you have to really convince me of why I should do it. And the thought is, oh, well, I'm not sick, therefore I can't pass on the virus. Of course, it's completely wrong, but you haven't heard that much from the people in charge to tell them, listen, this is going to happen. Even if you're not sick, you can pass things along to people who are more susceptible, and that's why you need to wear a mask. If we were getting that kind of message from the people in charge on a steady basis, it might make a difference to people like this fellow who called in. I have to say, to me, the 9,000 number is not a statistic. I know two people who died from coronavirus, and they weren't wearing masks, and they were in contact with people who didn't have masks. And it's frankly very upsetting to hear somebody kind of poo-pooing the whole idea of, oh, you know, masks are kind of optional, and we only wear them when we have to. And, you know, honestly, that's a pretty good argument for having a statewide mask mandate right there. You know, and the other thing I wanted to mention is,
Craig. Oh, there you are. Go ahead, Craig.
I'm sorry. There's a story in the South Florida Sun Sentinel today that the hospitals in South Florida are seeing more and more kids showing up with this dangerous coronavirus-related illness. And that, you know, that should be something that's being discussed while we're talking about whether or not to open the schools, too.
That's right, Craig. And as we talk about schools, masks, we want to touch on sports, too. This week, one Florida university called off some of its fall games for football. FIU is delaying the start of fall athletics till mid-September. Now, that announcement came just a few days after the governor held a news conference on Florida State's practice football field and encouraged schools to kick off.
Let's just be clear, you don't have sports. It ain't like there's not going to be activities going on with college students. And in fact, it will be unsupervised. It will be unstructured. And so just from a corona perspective, you would want the kids, I think, in the athletic program.
Now, two big college athletic conferences, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, have postponed their football seasons until at least the spring. The SEC and ACC conferences still have football on the calendar for next month, though. That includes Florida State and UF in Gainesville. What do you think about the suspension of college sports? Give us a call here on the Florida Roundup at 305-995-1800. As we welcome to the show, Fabiola Santiago, columnist with the Miami Herald. Fabiola, good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
It's good to talk to you and hear your voice. What are your thoughts about the governor welcoming sports as much of the rest of the country is saying, nope, we're just going to shut everything down. It's not safe.
Well, it's another wrong call by the governor of Florida. To think that a contact sport is something safe to play is just being in complete denial of the reality. As you've mentioned before today, the number of dead in Florida surpassed the 9,000 mark. And, this disease it doesn't affect old people only. I think we got past that belief so many months ago that it seems incredible that we're now, we're still in this phase where we have to try things. And then, people get more COVID and we have then, we backtrack and cancel. And, it's really the mixed messaging is what is prompting people like your caller to consistently and despite all evidence to the contrary, continue to be in denial about the worthiness of mask wearing.
Yeah, I mean, the mask wearing especially. Yeah, and, Major League Baseball saw a lot of positive COVID cases in their players.
The Miami Marlins had to cancel a number of games because of an infection that ran through a clubhouse when they were visiting Philadelphia.
Right, and at Florida State, some wide receivers are speaking out about the lack of transparency on testing at the mm-hmm. school. So some of the athletes are pushing back, too, Fabiola. They're showing concern about their own safety at the college level. You're listening to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. And so athletes are saying, we're not really confident about going out to play. Some of them are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can tell you that I talked to a friend in Gainesville, and he says they are so concerned about what's going to happen to the town when 50,000 students descend upon it. And, as we know, there a lot of them are teenagers who are parentless for the first time in their lives, no parental unit supervision. And what that's going to do, not only to the student population, but also to the town population. That's a lot of people running around.
Yeah, a lot of people, UF, FSU, these college towns, but also, football stadiums and how these big athletic events, if they're to be held, how they're going to be held at these stadiums and in the communities surrounding those stadiums and certainly on campus. Fabiola Santiago and Craig Pittman are our guests here on the Florida Roundup. We're going to get back to your phone calls and tweets here in a minute, 305-995-1800. I'd be remiss, and this will be a longer conversation that we're going to have to hold over our break coming up here, but Fabi and Craig, each of you have decades of experience here in Florida. You know this state well. Have you seen it? Have you experienced the divisiveness, the friction, political or otherwise, at any other moment that you can think of? Craig?
I think this is something that's been coming for a while. I mean, bear in mind that in Florida, this is why we constantly have we should call ourselves the recount state. Our our elections are so very close every time that we end up in a recount. And so I think that's one of the reasons why we're such a good symbol for the rest of the country, because the whole
country.
But
we accept the results. But the results are
so far
accepted.
So far.
We'll see. We're sort of famous for being divided. I mean, look at 2000 when we had that recount that guaranteed nobody's going to name a child Chad for the next 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I guess the difference is the anger and the scorn that you hear now. That's sort of a fresh element to me, and it's very disappointing to me, because we as Floridians, we're kind of in this boat together, and we need to start bailing pretty quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fabi, how about from your experience?
Yeah. Well, you know, the divisiveness I've been experiencing at a heightened level since 2016. You know, I've lost family and friends to President Trump's time in office. But interestingly enough, with COVID, there's been also a sort of return of my credibility among the same group of family and friends, except for the absolute and total deniers. You know, I did have one call, COVID, this COVID nonsense, he said. We're canceling a party because of this COVID nonsense. You know, and I felt that that phrase in itself said a lot of, you know, how he thinks about things. But in the community itself, I of course, the divisiveness has been there, and we saw it during the recent marches of the Black Lives Matter and the Cubanos for Trump marches, where very few people were wearing the mask in the Trump rallies, and, you know, almost everyone was wearing a mask in the Black Lives Matter rally.
Yeah, the mask has come to represent so much more than a public health safety measure. 305-995-1800. We're going to take as many calls as we can, Melissa. How about it in the next section?
Just line them up.
All across Florida. You know, it's one of the benefits of this program that we've tried to do, which is to allow Floridians to talk with Floridians. North Florida, Central Florida, Gulf Coast, East Coast, South Florida, from Key West to the Panhandle. What do you want your neighbors to know about how you are thinking about and handling the pandemic? 305-995-1800. 305-995-1800. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue talking about our divided state of Florida in this time of pandemic, with Fabiola Santiago, columnist at the Miami Herald, and Craig Pittman. He writes for the Florida Phoenix, author of several amazing books, including his latest, Cat Tale, and Your Calls. It's 305-995-1800 to join us as we've been talking about how to open schools, the canceling of sports, wearing masks. Where do you stand on all of these issues? By the way, the Florida High School Sports Association says high school sports are cleared to start in the state August 24th, despite COVID concerns. Michael is on the line in Daytona Beach and has some thoughts about all this. Hey, Michael, happy Friday. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Well, good afternoon from beautiful Daytona Beach, Florida. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My concern had to do with the previous topic when you were talking about schools. I was curious the thoughts on long-term plans from the schools. Everything that we've been hearing when it's funding that's coming from the state or from the national level has really been towards getting schools to start up, get things disinfected, be prepared. But what about long-term? A lot of times I've seen where you plan a budget and you get things set up, but then money runs out and, you know, for that particular program, it becomes very difficult, troublesome. A lot of times the costs get shifted to teachers. So I'm kind of curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and you say this as a former teacher, right, Michael?
That is correct. I taught for 15 years.
Okay. Yes. Okay, well, thank you so much for that, Fabi. You know, this pandemic is wreaking havoc on school budgets, I would think, both short and long term. But for right now, I think educators aren't thinking past the next day, the next week. They're just trying to get through this crisis right now, is my guess.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I've also talked to a lot of teachers. I have three teachers in my family. And I can tell you that they are scared to death. They're horrified of having to come into those scenes of the crowded halls that we saw in Georgia. And I've seen teachers take different, you know, positions on the subject of opening it up. my one of my daughters, who's a teacher, for example, she actually left the job to become a contractor for the school so she could stay home with her children, and she's not sending them. She chose virtual school, and so she's taken that approach. My other daughter, who teaches high school, ended up, well, you know, she can't afford to leave the job because she has a immunocompromised husband and at the same time needs the insurance, right? Mm-hmm. So she's going in all, you know, masked and shield and gloves and the whole bit. And she is truly, her and her work partner are the only ones in the school who have that approach. The other teachers and the administration really don't think this is, you know, that big of a deal that they need to wear masks when they're inside the school building. And she's horrified. She's horrified that she's going to kill her husband.
Wow. And, yeah, that gives you an idea of how dire it can be for so many families.
Exactly. And how they can, and they are, by the way, not in Miami-Dade County, but in Jacksonville.
Okay.
And so can they think long-term? That's kind of tough, I think, for everybody at the moment. Although they should be thinking, because the column I wrote this week points the attention to the fact that, you know, the experts are saying that, you know, COVID-19 is going to be around for a while. Mm-hmm. It is here to stay.
Yeah.
It will become part of the, you know, part of our medical picture.
Yeah.
For a long time. And,
yeah.
And so yeah. We should be thinking long term. Somebody should be.
And how institutions, how communities, how families, how individuals are going to be living with the reality of the virus, even with a vaccine or vaccines in the future. Troy is joining our conversation from Vero Beach. Troy, thanks for calling in and holding on. You're on the radio now.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. Your thoughts?
I don't agree with the mask wearing at all. I think it's a farce. And the numbers you guys are talking about.
Why do you think
now,
the mask wearing's a farce, Troy? What do you mean by that?
It's a
you mean it doesn't
cloth.
Protect you or anybody else?
No, absolutely not. I don't believe
so. So the scientific research, Troy, that exists, the empirical evidence that is out there that has shown, no doubt you've had the ability to see videos on YouTube or elsewhere that show how mask wearing reduces significantly the spread of aerosol particles from one's nose and mouth.
You
deny that?
If I don't have the disease,
you don't know whether you have the disease. You could have it and be an asymptomatic carrier of the disease.
And they've already shown that you very rarely, if at all, spread from an asymptomatic person. And people, you say people are
dying.
Who's
they? Where is that shown?
I'm not aware of that science, Troy.
Elderly people are dying. Y'all are talking about the schools now. So how many people under 18 years old in Florida have died from coronavirus? Y'all like throwing numbers around. How many people?
Kids are dying from the virus, but more importantly, kids can spread the virus to adults. And they can spread it to their grandparents, to an older teacher, to anyone.
Then grandma and grandpa can wear a mask. If grandma and grandpa are worried about catching it, they can wear a mask. My mother is 78 years old. She refuses to wear a mask. She's in good health. And she's not worried about it. For the government to force people to wear a mask is against our civil rights.
Is it against the civil rights to wear a seatbelt, Troy?
Yeah, I believe it is.
You don't wear a seat. You don't use a seatbelt.
So do you wear a seatbelt?
I wear a seatbelt because I choose to.
It's the law.
But you believe it's violating your civil rights?
I do. I absolutely do. I don't believe the government has the right to come into my private space and tell me what I'm supposed to do. I'm retired law enforcement.
Right.
I was a law enforcement officer for 33 years.
Yeah.
I completely disagree with
that. Did you ticket people if you pulled them over for something else and they weren't wearing their seatbelt?
Nope. Wouldn't do it.
Weren't you supposed to do that? Wasn't that part of your job?
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it because it's violating people's rights.
But is that your decision to make as a law enforcement officer?
Absolutely.
Oh, and by the way, our producer Denise Royal said seven children have died of coronavirus the youngest in the state, was 9 years old, and they and no underlying health conditions.
So we're dictating laws over seven children.
There have been 9,000 deaths overall in the state of Florida. 9,000 deaths.
Children die on trampolines every year. So you're going to ban trampolines?
But this is a global pandemic that we are all at risk of getting.
What about the children that drown? What about the children that drown swimming? Are you going to ban swimming?
That's not a valid argument, Troy. That's just simply, that's not a good analogy. And yes, they are regulated.
Troy, we appreciate the ideas there, and certainly you sharing them and happy to listen to them. Craig, what do you hear from Troy in that?
Troy's full of crap, basically.
I'm sorry to be blunt, but there
have been more than 28,000 kids who have contracted the virus, okay, in Florida. In Florida, 28,000 have contracted the virus. That's a fact. You can't
With seven who have died.
But you know what, Craig and Fabiola, the callers that we've gotten from gentlemen who take the positions that they take shows you that even though they're in the minority in this state, that the public is divided and that there isn't universal acceptance of science. There's been a discrediting of science and a discrediting of public health to the detriment of us all, Fabby.
Exactly. It has come from the very top. Imagine what a different place we would be in if the president of the United States from the very beginning had taken the approach that we need to take care of ourselves, that we need to wear a mask, that we need to social distance. That we, if that message had been sent clear from the beginning and throughout this pandemic, we wouldn't be where we are today. We wouldn't have this. And here is another fact. 100 adults ages 25 to 44 died of COVID-19 in Florida last month alone. Just in 1 month, you had 100 people who were young and dying of this disease. It's undeniable. You know, the death rate that we have of 9,000 people would equal how many 9/11s, how many plane crashes? The daily toll of death equals a plane crash a day.
Mm-hmm. In Florida alone, we saw the state numbers were over 200 in the last 24 hours.
We shouldn't just talk about the infections and the deaths, but we should also be thinking about the fact that scientists are still determining the long-term effects of being infected and having the disease, that there are still indications there might be brain damage, lung damage that the folks are going to have to live with for years after getting over the virus.
Yeah, there's so much we still don't know. Yeah.
We're up against the clock here. Craig, thanks so much for spending the hour with us here on the Roundup.
Thanks for having me.
Via Skype there, Craig Pittman from the Florida Phoenix, author of a number of books, including Oh Florida, How America's Weirdest State Influences the Rest of the Country. And Fabiola Santiago, thanks for sharing your thoughts as well with
us
today.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to everyone who engaged with us on the phones and on social media, including those who don't agree with the overwhelming science, which isn't partisan. And, you know, just wear your masks, everyone. Social distance, wash your hands, avoid crowds. We are all in this together, and that is our show. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming. The Director of Radio Operations at WLRN is Peter Meritz. He's also our Technical Director. We get engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Chris Remington answered the phones this hour. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos. More at aaronlibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great and safe weekend. We'll be back next Friday at noon.